Hey guys, my guest tonight, John Kozik, is going to tell us about the history and the use of the Ouija board. Be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Good evening, everybody. Happy Tuesday. You know, I made a mistake today. You know, I did. I forgot, you know, when I was scheduling these shows up, I forgot all about the presidential debate tonight. I'm so sorry. So a lot of you are going to be watching that, and I understand that. My feelings aren't hurt if you're not here. That's fine. But I forgot. Usually I schedule around it, but it's totally blanked my mind. My name is Charlotte. I'll be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento, California. We're 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you think you have a paranormal need, we can get to you. It might take us a couple days. If you need to get a hold of us, look us up on social media. Speaking of which, if you're watching from a social media platform, which I know a lot of you are, and you haven't done so already, depending on which one you're on, please hit that follow button, hit that subscribe button. You know, we're always looking for subscribers. And please come into the chat room if you are here tonight. Chat amongst yourselves. And if you like what you see in here tonight, please give me a thumbs up, happy face, or, you know, just show me some love. Be careful. Tonight is one of those nights that the internet is going to be weird because of what's going on, you know, that debate's on. And I have Xfinity in this neighborhood. Everybody in this neighborhood has Xfinity. So I was watching another program, and I was watching like the Brady Bunch or something this afternoon, and my Xfinity went down this afternoon. So it's already starting to do weird things. So I just wanted to give you guys a heads up about that. You know, if I drop off or if the guest drops off, don't go anywhere because I will be able to, you know, bring everything back up. But, or if we freeze up or the little screen goes black or whatever, that's what the issue is, because everybody and their brother's on Xfinity tonight. I can guarantee that, you know, watching this debate. Okay, anyway, yes. Well, you know, everybody at one time, well, not everybody, but most people at one time of their life, you know, comes across in a Ouija board. And I know I did. There was one here at the house. My sister had one at her house. You know, and then I noticed different plays, and I'll talk about that, about how they're trying to appeal to younger kids. And there's a lot of fear out there about them. You know, there's ghost teams, you know, that will tell you to stay away from them because they can call in evil spirits and stuff. But I think my guest tonight, John Kozik, I hope I got his last name right. John Kozik has a lot to tell us about the history. See, there it is. I went to where Mario went and came back. John Kozik has a lot of knowledge about this, and I think you're going to find this really interesting, and I think you're going to look at the Ouija board in a different light at the end of the show. Okay, let me bring him in, and let's get this thing going. Hello, sir.
Hello, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Hopefully we won't disappear tonight. We'll see.
All right, we'll see.
We went once, so yeah. So tell me about you.
Oh, so I own two Ouija museums, one in Salem, Massachusetts, one in Baltimore, and I became fascinated with the Ouija board after I inherited my grandmother's Ouija. That was the late 90s, and so going online to learn more about it really fascinated me to see that not all Ouija boards look the same. There is literally hundreds, if not thousands, of different boards, and so at first I just became a very obsessed collector. But eventually, I met some friends who also collected, and we formed a group called the Talking Board Historical Society. So I'm part of a registered nonprofit who research, preserve, celebrate the history of these boards. And through our research, we've uncovered all sorts of great things, like women that were unfortunately written out of history, responsible mm-hmm. for naming the board, proving it worked at the mm-hmm. patent office, put in some headstones and different markers for the people responsible for making these boards. But our research is really what we know today about the Ouija board comes from a lot of the TBHS research. So just fascinated with Ouija boards, and you know, it's all I do for a living. I left a job of 22 years to work at the museums. So, yeah, that's Ouija's my life.
Well, my question, you know, the question pops up because you hear nothing but negative stuff about them. Why did this negative stuff start occurring? Was it because of movies? I mean, the first time I really noticed any negativity aimed with that thing was with the movie The Exorcist, you know, when she was talking to Captain Howdy. So could that be where it started, where all the negativity started, or has the negativity always been there?
No, it's been there all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. in true crime, there's, you know, a suicide by 1900, murders by the 1930s. And in horror movies, it had been there from the very beginning. The first talking horror movie back in 1928 called mm-hmm. The Terror, there's a Ouija board in there. So, I mean, today there's over 500 horror movies, but it's been there from the very beginning. And, you know, bad stories happened from the beginning. The way I look at the Ouija board, I kind of look at it with a scale. And I think things get darker in horror movies. And certainly The Exorcist changed a lot of people's views towards the Ouija, whether they know it or not. It's a very subliminal scene with the Ouija. You know, they don't talk about it and they never blame her possession on it. So even to this day, when I meet people who tell me it's their favorite movie, they've seen it 10 times, they still question, was there a Ouija board in there? So I think the sale gets tipped a little bit after that. It also times with the end of the Vietnam War, the last major war with the draft. And so I think that's the tipping point for it.
And can you tell us a little bit about the history of this? When did people start using these things and why did they start using them?
Sure. Yeah, they really, during the Civil War, since everyone is affected by death, mid-1800s, they're trying every which way they can to talk to the dead. You know, things from Europe like seances and pendulum and tarot, automatic writing are kind of getting thrown into a ring, as well as alphabet boards. A couple years before the Civil War in 1848, the Fox sisters just outside of Rochester, New York, had made a claim that they could communicate with spirits that they had heard knocking a response back to them. And so, you know, they'd ask yes and no questions and wait for a knock or two, try counting knocks to figure out what letter of the alphabet that it might correspond with, and then eventually pointing to the alphabet, waiting for a knock on a, you know, an alphabet on a board. So it really crossed paths with the automatic writing planchette, and that's how they start. So a little bit post-Civil War, at that point where people are using them as homemade items. But 1890 is when a manufacturer in Baltimore, Charles Kennard, produces the first board called the Witch Board. And a few months later, a woman named Helen Peters asked it what it wanted to be called. It spelled back Ouija. So Ouija becomes the first mass-produced board, and that's in 1890.
Wow. Now, I've seen these things in the store because, I mean, they're marketing them to every age group. Because, I mean, you see them in pink, you see them in blue, you know, to market towards boys and girls. I mean, like you say, is there a difference in these boards? Because, like you say, there's different boards and they're different shapes.
I don't believe there's a difference in the boards, but I can tell you that some people do. And, for instance, some people might say that a wooden board is closer to the earth and it would work better for them than something made of plastic, or that a homemade board where themselves or a friend put energy into making it would work better than a store-bought board. And personally, I think they're all the same, but if you believe that one would work better or not as well, that will definitely influence your experience with the Ouija.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about alphabet boards. So are there different types of boards?
Yeah, I mean, Ouija is the brand we all know today, and there's hundreds, if not thousands, of different manufacturers who have made these over the years. When Ouija came out in 1890, it was protected by a patent, and so no one else could make one of them, an alphabet board with a pointing device, for 16 years. So by the time, you know, the patent expires, you could make a mystery board or a mystic board, some kind of generic name like that. But most people would not want it because they had only read about, talked about, and used the brand Ouija.
I had a friend, a really good friend. I still have a friend who claimed to be in contact with aliens. And he claimed, and when I compared this thing he was using to a Ouija board, he got really mad. But he had designed this custom board to communicate with them. And the first thing I said was, oh, it's kind of like an Ouija board. And he really got upset, going, oh, no, it's not. But, I mean, it's stuff like that, right? I mean, people can design these things to communicate with whatever.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because in the museum in Salem, I have a board called the Astromagnetic. And it was, my guess was it was made sometime in the late 60s, early 70s. Mm-hmm. But it was designed to speak specifically to aliens. So most people tend to think of these boards as just, you know, speaking to spirits, the afterlife. Mm-hmm. But they're used in lots of different ways, you know, not just an oracle. There are boards that I have in the museum that were created to try to speak to your past lives, mm-hmm. To try to read other people's minds. And my friend Karen, she uses the Ouija. She believes that she can communicate with plants and animals through the Ouija.
Okay.
So, you know, other beliefs in other than just spirit communication. So I'm glad you knew. Sometimes when I tell people these things, you know, as soon as I say aliens, I might get a little bit of a reaction. And I'm always like, huh, that's their line. But most people are pretty open to the idea of being able to channel other things.
That's why when I was just telling you about that, I was waiting for a reaction because you never know.
I usually when I tell different stories and then I talk about, you know, someone used the Ouija to talk to their dog, that's mm-hmm. usually the line that I see from a lot of people. But then other people are like, oh, yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Oh, yeah, perfect. So, you know.
Well, even to me, as a ghost hunter, I have done the ITC water technique here at the house to see if my deceased dogs were here, you know. So I got the black pan, my fingers stirring away, the, you know, camera flash going off, the light looking down in there, you know, to see if I can see it, you know. So I mean, it is what it is, right?
Yeah.
With people, is there a certain technique, people, because I know with that fear, you know, that you don't know what you're going to be contacting, is there a certain type of way that you have to go about using these boards to ensure that nothing bad happens, or is it just a general way to use them?
I tell people the best rule you have using the Ouija board is your gut instinct and whatever's going to give you peace of mind. So I wouldn't call it a rule to, you know, say a prayer before you start or light a candle. Mm-hmm. But if you think it's going to give you, you know, protect you or, you know, help, you know, by saging the board or something like that, then those are things that you should do. But I think, you know, you got to be open to the idea of getting messages. And if it's not working for you, then I suggest either changing the person you're using it with or going to a different location, trying different things, because, you know, so many things influence what happens and how well it works or doesn't work for you. But as far as rules to do it, I say no. Other people are probably going to, you know, disagree with me and tell you need to sage it or you need to protect yourself in some way. But to me, these boards are just like a cell phone, and I use that same logic, meaning that,
Have you contacted anybody with it?
I have not. I mean, so I became interested when I inherited my grandmother's Ouija. Right. She used it alone. She flew on it and could yell out letters and numbers quicker than anyone could write it down. But it just doesn't work for me the way it did for her. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I'm so nervous about the board not working for me. I prefer not to use it. For me, you know, I know everything. I know a lot about Ouija boards, but I don't know the experience of using them so well. And that really scares me because it is how I make my living. It is how my passion, what I love. And it's a little scary to not be able to tell you everything about Ouija.
Right. You know what I would think? It's like anything else. I mean, I have ghost hunters on my team who are good at certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have people that are really good at getting ghostly photographs. I have people that are good with getting EVPs. And it could be that way with that board, too. You know, there's just more some people that are more sensitive to using it and are able to use it, you know, and get results.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel that way. I think sometimes people get a little taken back that I know so much about Ouija, but I can't tell them those experiences. But the good thing is, you know, I am in Salem, Massachusetts, and I can tell you that most people come to the museum to tell me their Ouija story. So, you know, I have a vast knowledge of stories, you know, of people telling me. And so, you know, I'm able to at least relay that in some way when they're asking questions.
Absolutely. Can you share some of those with us?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the best stories I like to tell is really, some people, when they think of the Ouija, I think they just go right to a negative. You know, maybe they used it when they were younger and didn't take it seriously, so they didn't have a good experience, or they had heard a story, or obviously influenced in some way by movies. But I had a woman about 2 years ago come to the museum who was very upset. She told me when she was a kid, she had used the Ouija board, and it told her something bad was going to happen to her. An hour later, her house caught on fire, and she had to rescue all of her pets and animals from the house. The next day, she went through the rubble. She lost everything except the Ouija board. Now, I waited for her to stop crying before eventually I was like, well, that sounds like you're pretty lucky to have the Ouija board. She had viewed it as what caused the fire, and I viewed it as what gave her notice and saved her life. I waited a while longer until she was way more calm, and I was like, you know, you might want to consider building a house out of Ouija boards. That kind of sounds like the safest play. But she did not view it that way, I promise you. But that's a story where I think, you know, people looking for a negative, you know, you know, you use these boards, you're looking for a confirmation that there's an afterlife, or, and I think a lot of people get it one time and that's it, one and done. They use the Ouija board one time, they get the confirmation. I don't think it's a negative thing if you get confirmation. Again, right. I don't believe the board is causing the problems. I think it are you know, causing something. I think it's just informing you. And if it was truthful, then to me it worked, and that's great.
I could think of a book that I read, Ghost of Flight 401. And I don't know if you've read that, but it's an interesting book because the gentleman that writes it is a skeptic. And he talks to a couple scientists that are skeptics. But he meets up with pilots who are able to use it, you know, you use the board, and they're communicating with this dead flight engineer. And they've got all these newspaper articles, right, you know, that they know the information on, but they're not saying anything about them, and they're able to get this information out of the Ouija board. So the flight engineer was giving them information about the crash and everything. So it's a very fascinating book. You should check it out. It's hard to find that book.
Yeah, it sounds interesting to me, for sure.
For a while, but you can find it on Amazon every once in a while. And it's a fascinating book because he looks at both sides of that. But they do eventually solve, you know, as far as his book goes, they solve what happened to the airplane via the Ouija board, talking to this flight engineer. And it's fascinating to read. It's a fascinating read.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that are unexplained as well, you know, and I like that mystery of to the Ouija board myself. You know, I like that, you know, you want to try to use rational thinking and think, okay, well, they must have known or something, whatever it is. But sometimes there's just things that you hear that you're like, I don't see how that's possible. I just don't know. And so, you know, it gives you a little, you know, thought of, wait, there's a lot that we just don't know and we can't explain.
I'm thinking about you talking about your grandmother and how fast she could read those letters off, you know, how fast that stuff would move on the board. I used to feel sorry for the people that had to write all that down. And then sit there and, you know, cut it up and stuff, but word by word. I mean, God, whoever got that job.
Yeah. She would yell it out quick. It was faster than they could write it down. I've watched videos of my friend Karen, who I mentioned earlier, Karen Dahlman. She has a YouTube channel where she goes over it, and a lot of her sessions she uses with her partner Rodney, and they just keep going. She writes down with one hand, and her other hand is on the planchette. Wow. So they don't stop until the conversation's over, kind of thing. If it's a story being told, and then she kind of figures out where all the breaks are and reads it back. And it's really impressive because, you know, to write, especially a large amount of words like that, and then go back to it, you know, normally people would ask, you know, a name or a date or something like that. So it's kind of letters you can yell out and kind of remember what you just yelled. Right. But she does it in a way that's very long. And I think it's pretty awesome to watch that the results that she gets.
Yeah, those planchettes can start moving, boy. They can really start moving.
Yep. And I've seen people, we were at Sage Paracon in the UK, and we did an investigation at Coombe Abbey. And Karen and I had the Ouija room for it, and the board wasn't working very well for some people. She was able to put her hand on the planchette with their hands, and it would take off, go pretty fast, and she took her hands off, and it would continue. So she was able to kind of jumpstart it, and I saw that happen, you know, over and over again there. So she really has a magic touch, so to speak, using them.
I've even heard stories where people have taken their hands off and it's flown off the board.
I've heard those stories as well, for sure.
Yeah, that would be crazy to watch too. And with the collecting that you do, how hard is it to find these old boards?
Well, I mean, eBay has quite a few boards, and I think almost all the collectors go there. I've been collecting for a long time now, so it's harder to add anything to my collection. The things that I'm looking for are much more rare for various reasons. And so I don't get to add too much to the collection now, but I can tell you it's an obsession of mine. It's been that way for a long time. I would consider myself a more obsessed collector than the average collector of almost any item. I mean, I've been known to get in a car within 2 hours, pick up my best friend merch in downtown Boston, drive 21 hours straight to Florida to buy boards, be in Burbank, California within 48 hours. So I would put my obsession with these against anyone. So just about anything. If you've met me more than one time, you probably remember that I'm the Ouija guy.
You don't have to tell me this, but I mean, when you go to Barnes & Noble, you see these Parker Brothers boards and how much they cost. For you to get a historical board like that, what is that? What type of cost are we talking about?
I mean, a vintage board, let's go back to the 1940s where that's kind of like we got 50 or so different manufacturers that competed against Ouija during that wartime. So a 1940s board you could probably pick up as low as, say, $75. Okay. But you could also, for the right one, could definitely go over $1,000. I'd say the average from World War II is probably around $250, $300 at this point. That's the average for something like that. But the Parker Brothers boards, you know, they outsold Monopoly in 1967. So 2 million boards were sold. So that one, you know, if you go to a flea market or yard sale, you could pick it up for $50 or less. You know, if you're really hunting and looking for them. But the problem is, it's just you could go to 100 yard sales, 100 flea markets, and you're going to be lucky to find one Parker Brothers board. So finding them in the wild, so to speak, is much more difficult than in searching eBay for them.
Well, we talked about the negativity from movies, but do you think that this big thing, because I mean, I've been ghost hunting for almost 25 years. And when I first started, it was like what you say, you're kind of shy sometimes about telling people about, hey, I collect these boards, this is what, you know, these things, because people are afraid of them. When I was first ghost hunting, it was the same thing. When you walked into a place, like I remember doing like the Wilden Opera House, and I had to go check in with the city because we were filming there. And I remember checking in with the city, and I kind of was towing the ground because I said, well, I'm a ghost hunter. Because you didn't know what kind of reaction you were going to get. Do you think that the ghost hunting programs now over the last 20 years have helped this, you know, helped increase the fact that people want these things more?
It's funny. So my friend Merch that I mentioned earlier, I'm in Salem. So I'm kind of a bubble, so to speak, of meeting people who have come to this city, which has been known for paranormal activity. And I'm meeting people who really want to use the Ouija. You know, whether it's to ghost hunt or to communicate with a deceased loved one that they, you know, want to reconnect with. But what's funny is maybe about 25 years ago, Merch had made his own Ouija board, started a company called Cryptique. And as he took it around Salem, most of the shops were not interested in carrying Ouija boards. So there was a big stigma to them, even in Salem 25 years ago. Sure. I think today the stigma is it's there in the using of it, but not in the selling of it. So, you know, it's fairly accessible today. Spirit Halloween usually has them on sale this time of year. And I think Five Below has some right now. They just released an Exorcist version, a Wednesday version, a Salem version. So there's a new, lot of pop culture kind of boards that have been produced. So in that way, I don't think there's a stigma, like most stores would carry them. Right. But I think, yes, there's definitely still a stigma of people using them and thinking that they're going to open a door or become possessed or something like that.
And what a lot of people don't realize, and I was just thinking of that while you were talking, you know, as ghost hunters, a lot of ghost hunters that I know don't use them, but they're putting the flashlights down, right? They're putting, you know, turn the flashlight on for yes, turn this other one on for no. Well, guess what? It's an electrical Ouija board. I mean, that's what you're doing. Every time you do that stuff, it's the same thing as the Ouija board. So people don't realize that.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Again, I like to see where the line is for people. And so some people will say they like pendulum or tarot and they're not nervous around those. And to me, it's all the same, you know. I think a lot of the stigma obviously comes from horror movies, and there's less horror movies with pendulum or tarot in them. I think with the newest Exorcist movie, the new Witchboard remake, and the movie Tarot, you're going to see a change in some of that, the fear that people might have towards those items. But right now, I think a lot of people are more comfortable with those things, thinking that the conversation is a little slower, that, you know, you're only asking yes and no questions for the most part, as opposed to spelling messages.
The other thing I was thinking, you have all these boards in your possession. And the first question that would come to mind as a ghost hunter is, have you had any activity in and around you because of it?
For me, no, absolutely not. I have 600 boards right to the right of me now. I have the two museums. It doesn't, but what's funny is roughly 3 years ago, I was at Sage Paracon. I'm sorry. I was at Michigan Paracon up in the UP, and John Zaffis was on a panel there. For those who might not know, John is related to Ed and Lorraine Warren, and he has a TV show called The Haunted Collector. And someone in the audience had asked him, you know, well, how can you take these items that people consider cursed, evil, negative, haunted, how can you take them and put them into your collection and nothing bad happens to you? His answer was, well, I don't feed it negativity, and I only show it love. And so I just don't view the Ouija board as an evil or negative thing. Like I said, like a car, like a gun, it's the intent you put behind it. And I just look at the board as a tool to have a conversation, very similar in the way to a cell phone.
Absolutely. I know a gentleman who is a bit of a debunker, but he likes to collect haunted objects just to have them.
Sure.
And he's never had anything happen to him. He's had dolls. He's had all everything you can think of, and nothing's happened to him. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's the intention that you have behind it and the intention you have going in, especially if you're going to be using it.
Yeah, when people come to the museum, I think my passion for the boards and storytelling comes out. And so I think people are like, wow, this is really great. But in the space in Salem, I mean, there are boards that people do walk right to that I know do have a somewhat of a past of being, you know, they were donated because the previous owners might have had a bad experience with them. And they'll walk right to those boards and tell me that's where they feel something. And so I'm always interesting if I can hear those stories without feeling as though I influenced them in any way. I didn't tell them a story about the board. I didn't it was very unassuming. And so people have reactions to them. I just don't.
Do you ever have people come in who take the tour, you know, of your boards? Do you ever have people that are kind of apprehensive about doing it?
Oh, sure, sure. You would surprisingly, even though I'm in Salem, I meet people. For those who don't know, the Ouija Museum, the Salem Witch War Museum, is in the back of another store. The store is basically a Harry Potter store. So you have to go into this store to gain access to the museum. And so people, it's kind of unassuming. It's like a speakeasy in a sense. So some people come to the Harry Potter store not knowing the Ouija Museum is there. They look through the archway, but they can see into the room. And as soon as they see Ouija boards, they'll grab the kids and leave. I have people that do come back by themselves because the person they're traveling with is too afraid to even be in a room full of Ouija boards. And then I have people that come back and clutch the arm of the person they're with. You know, they're afraid there's going to be like a jump scare or something back there. So that happens pretty regularly. I really appreciate the people that do leave their comfort zone, that are very nervous to be around Ouija boards, that do come back to try to want to learn something more about them. I'm very appreciative of that. And for those people especially, I really want to, like, you know, take them on a little bit of a roller coaster ride with the Ouija and not just tell them, you know, bad things and what they might already think, but to surprise them with some good things that they weren't aware of.
Okay. Are there any particular brands of board that are more ornate than the rest?
Some of them, you know, the Ouija board or talking boards, they kind of follow two paths. They really try to copy the Ouija brand, which is the one we all know. And so they copy it as closely looking as they can, maybe sell it for less money, or they kind of go above and beyond. They really try to, like, put a lot more, you know, words or different imagery on there. So, I mean, some of the ones that stand out to me are early on in 1892, Charles Kennard made a board called the Volo, V-O-L-O, mm-hmm. and he put rain and clear and rain on there. So mm-hmm. early on, he's trying to, you know, appeal to farmers, try to appeal to sailors. By the 1940s, there's a board I have that has a whole lot of text around the edges of it. It has mm-hmm. options for your career, your love life, when the war will end. And, you know, that being sold during World War II, people are not just using it as spirit communication. They really want, you know, to ask the average question, you know, who will I marry? When how many kids will I have? Right. Or when the war will end? And funny enough, on that particular board, one of the answers is for when the war will end, Germany will surrender when Hitler dies by his own hand. So they actually predicted it and put it on that board.
Well, that does make sense. I mean, that's like if you do, you know, people that do psychic readings. I mean, a lot of the questions are exactly what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who am I going to marry? Who's going to do this? And the farmer thing, I think, would be great. You know, yep. Is it going to hail? Is it going to rain? Is it going to thunder? My crops are out there. I mean, how useful is that? That's really cool. I would love to see a board like that just to see what it looks like. You know.
Yeah, I mean. I don't know when I have not done the research enough to know when the Farmer's Almanac started, but right. in 1892, I would think that finding weather predictions would be pretty difficult. So to see it on a Ouija board or a talking board is pretty cool at that time.
That is very cool. I would think. I would think so. What do you think has built up the popularity of these boards for people?
I think it's built up, you know, when Parker Brothers bought the brand in 1966, they were a gaming company and they already had Monopoly under their belt. And so that really helped to really get it on a much more global platform. You know, when they sold it in Australia, they advertised it, you know, for the makers of Monopoly comes Ouija. Not that they're connected in any other way than the manufacturer, but that's how they tried to sell them there. And so they were able to get it licensed over in, you know, France and Italy, UK, of course, Canada. And so that helped. Being a gaming company, selling worldwide, that helped. Today, I think, you know, 500 plus horror movies that put the Ouija board in it always keep it relevant because pretty much every year there's a movie coming out with a Ouija board. It might not be a good movie, you know. Recently, we had Ouija Shark 2, the sequel to Ouija Shark, come out. But, you know, there's 500 horror movies, so every year movies come out with that. And, obviously those start to influence people in some way about it.
In your collection, and I know you have a lot of them, are you able to pick out a top one that you really like?
Well, I mean, taking my grandmother's board out of the mix, that's really my favorite. That's the first one.
Sure.
But my other favorite one is it's called the Electric Mystifying Oracle, and it's a board that was made back in the 1930s. It's a unique board because it's pretty large. It's metal, and the planchette with it was metal, had ball bearing casters on the bottom, a battery, and a light bulb inside of it. And so there are like these little bumps on the board. So when the planchette passed over the bumps, it would light up. And it's, you know, 1933 was the Great Depression. The board, they were trying to sell it for $5, whereas the average Ouija board was selling for about $1.50. And so people, you know, during the Great Depression didn't want to spend the kind of money. So they scrapped, a couple of years later, they scrapped all of the boards for the war effort. So today we know of 9 boards and 5 planchettes that still exist. When that board came up for sale, it was sold as a whole set, a whole collection of an old-time collector who was getting out of collecting for health reasons. And he wouldn't sell the one board. You had to buy the entire collection, roughly 300 boards, roughly. And so within a couple hours, I secured the funding. I rented a car. I picked up merch in downtown Boston at 5 o'clock on a Friday, and we drove 21 hours straight to get it. You know, I thought that was my once in a lifetime opportunity to get it. What's funny is, you know, in this adventure, other collectors were getting wind of what was going on, and they tried to make their own deals, try to screw me out of my deal. And it wasn't until we showed up if we knew that the guy would still honor the deal we agreed upon. But, you know, we loaded up, we got out of there, And Merch and I had worked all day Friday and then drove 21 hours. We were pretty giddy. We had seen stuff that in 30 years of collecting and researching, Merch had never seen, you know, boxes by a company called Oriole and different boards that we just couldn't believe was in the collection. So we're pretty giddy, but we laughed. We're like, if we get in a car accident right now, there'll be Ouija boards all across the highway, and it'll be the most investigated place in America at that time.
Oh, so, that'd be hilarious. So did the board still work or no? Was it still working?
The planchette, no. I had to kind of make my own version of it to work, so I have a remote on it, and I can show people what it looked like, but the original electronics are long gone.
Oh, it's unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, that would be a really cool board, too. Really cool.
It's pretty primitive, to say the least. You know, you can imagine 1930s light bulb with a, you know, a little lever that made it turn on. I'm sure it can be reproduced pretty easy. I found something just to put something in there so that when it's in a case. So to show people, I just grab a remote and turn it on just so they get the idea of it.
It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the game Operation, right? You know, the way that's rigged up. Because, you know, when you touch the sides, it goes off. So as this thing's moving around, it's going to trigger the light on.
Yep.
So that's kind of cool. Yeah. That's very cool. Very cool. Are you married? I know it's probably none of my business.
No. I have a partner, Mandy, who I've been with for over 10 years, though.
What does she think of your collection?
Well, she was a Ouija collector, too. I think at a certain point she realized that my collecting was a little crazier, so she started focusing on some other things. But she's also a collector as well. So two collectors living under the same house. And our house is pretty unique because Ouija boards are only one of the things I collect. Vintage Halloween, old Kentucky Fried Chicken. She is super into old lamps and Hollywood Regency and a lot of kitsch. And so we have tiki collection, tiki bar stuff. So a lot of our house is very well curated and displayed. So much like a museum, you could come through the house and see different collections of stuff.
It's well lived. And I have that. I have a tiki collection. I have Christmas trees. I'm a Christmas tree person. I like unique ornaments.
Cool.
So I have my trees up with new ornaments all the time. My family come over and they shake their heads because, you know, every room is different.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I like collectors. I like people with a passion to hunt things down like that. And I don't know. I think it's more interesting than sports or something. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to be super into something, be and, you know, I might not collect Christmas, but I bet you and I could have a very long conversation of our obsessiveness to collect things and what we do, how much we pay, how far we travel, what's the rarest thing you got, what's the best deal you ever got. I'm sure we could have a lot of great conversation about it. So I love meeting other collectors.
I have some old cameras because I'm a photographer, so I like to collect old, you know, old cameras and stuff. So I have that. So it's amazing I have ghosts in the house. But see, you don't have that problem. I have that problem because of the old stuff that's in here. I used to collect Greek antiquities, you know. So I went through that phase. Of course, I had some of those ghosts in my house. So it is fun though. It's fun to collect stuff. It really is fun.
Yeah, I think you meet a great community of people. I mean, for me, some of my closest friends are Ouija collectors. And what I like about what we do is a lot of collectors tend to get the item and then, you know, no one's able to see it anymore. It leaves the public eye. And so fortunate for me, I'm able to have a museum where I can put the collection out and tell those stories. But really, the friendships that I got from it, we always consider our friendship more important than whatever the item is. So even though it can be a pretty competitive thing to want to own something that we only know of, you know, five or something to exist, and all my friends are going to want it, we work pretty well together to see, you know, if we can step back and not spend the other person's money. So, you know, we've kind of created a community of people that realize that the item is kind of more important. I mean, is less important than the friendship. And so, you know, as long as it's somebody has it in their collection, you know, that's great. We realize, or, you know, I definitely realize that I'm not going to own every single talking board or Ouija board. I'll try, but I know I'm not going to. And so letting my friends having something unique that not everyone has, I think is what makes it special collecting, is that we all kind of have something rare that nobody else has.
Sure. And then when your friend gets a really cool one, you can go over there and check it out. And
exactly.
It makes for a thing, you know. The other thing I was going to ask you is, you know, you talked about that metal board. You know, from what was the 30s? What kind of shape do these things come to you in? Are you getting them in fairly good shape?
Yeah, I mean, I've upgraded over the years. I have upgraded some boards because, like, my grandmother's board, she used it, and it's very well worn. Her planchette, even, you know, she would wear out the felt on the bottom, and she would just take Elmer's glue and dab each leg, and then put it on like a felt, and then just randomly cut the felt like whatever, a square. She didn't make it nice and neat because it was like a pit crew. She was gonna change it again later. So for the most part, my boards, you know, my collecting is I grab it first, and then if I can upgrade later, great, I will. But sometimes, you know, like my friend Rick, he loves having boards that look used, you know, because you think like that's the history is people using them. If you get a board that's pristine from, you know, the 1940s, you think, oh, maybe a kid got this for Christmas. He wasn't into it, threw it over your shoulder and didn't care. But when you see a board that's looked like it's well worn, that has a story to it. And, you know, to know that people use the boards is the, I think, the part where you start really wondering, like, what conversations, what were they asking? What answers did they get? And so that it, some people might be more drawn to that, but mine kind of all over the place. I will upgrade a little bit, but I don't like something too pristine.
I was just thinking about when you talk about other people using the board, going back to that book that you should go get, Ghost of Flight 401. The first time that he sits down with a board with one of the stewardesses, and they're in this, no, they're not the stewards. He's at a writer's conference in some, up in the Catskills or someplace in some old lodge. And they've been, and the names are all like on these old pieces of wood. So he's in there and they're talking to an old poet, supposedly. And what struck him and kind of scared him was that when he was on the board, they asked, you know, they were having this conversation, and the question was, can we see you? And the next, the answer was, yes, if you blow out the lights.
Oh.
And he would, and they looked at each other and thought, blow out the lights. And then it dawned on them that when this particular poet was staying in this lodge, they had candlelight in there. They didn't have regular lights. And that really scared him because he thought, well, where did that come from? So it's interesting here. You know, it's interesting to read, like you say, go back on the history of some of these things to see who used them, or sit there and wonder about who used them, because you never know.
Yep, I think, well, that's why when people do donate the boards, if they reach out ahead of time with a story that they believe was a negative story and they don't feel comfortable with the Ouija board, I like to, you know, keep that story with the board. The TBHS kind of collects these boards, and we bring them around. We've been to Michigan Paracon with them to tell the stories of them. But I think those are what's interesting, because those two stories, they're not identical. I mean, you might hear similar stories where something moved around the room, or, you know, lights were flickering and stuff. But sometimes they're just kind of opposite of each other. And I really like that part of it is I like it when I get to hear a story that I'm like, oh, that's cool. I haven't heard that one before, you know?
Yeah, I think it would be fascinating to collect them. I really do. I wouldn't have room here anymore because of all my other stuff, but that would be something that would be fun to collect, you know, as far as that goes. And, and to have the store in Salem, I mean, that kind of adds more mystic stuff to it, you know, and maybe people are a little more afraid of it because of the history of Salem.
Absolutely. Salem, you know, we got the witch history, of course. But the Ouija, there's Ouija history in Salem too, because that's where Parker Brothers was located when they bought the brand. So their factory was very close to where my museum is. But I think, you know, people come. What I like about Salem is, you know, the history is very dark, and it starts with this horrible thing that happened. But what has come from it today, I think Salem is one of the most amazing places to be. You're in New England, you're on the water, you get this old, it's a lot of, you know, it's a very small town. It's not a lot of industry and not a lot of, like, you know, high rises or things like that. They've kept a lot of the historical charm to the city. So it's magical in that way. And really, I just love that the diversity of what the city has, you know, the people there. And I think it makes it a really nice place to just want to spend time. And so, you know, I'm very fortunate to be in the city, because, you know, people are going to have less negativity towards me. They have to pay an admission to come to the museum. So I weed out anyone that might want to come in and just want to be confrontational and, right. you know, say bad things. I'm either getting people who are not afraid, don't believe, or they want to learn more about it. So I'm very fortunate that I weed out any kind of people like that, that like the service industry or like any waiters, or, you know, when it gets crazy in Salem, how the stress can be there for accommodating so many people in such a small space. Mm-hmm. I don't have to deal with that a lot of times. And so it's a really magical place to come into the museum where, you know, we get to know each other. You're there for a little while. I get to learn about where you're from, where you're going, where you're traveling, and what your beliefs are with Ouija. And they get to learn a lot about me. So you're learning the history, but you're really getting a special experience that you don't get at most museums. Something that, like, you know, you get led around. I tell you stories and hear, you know, answer questions, and you don't feel rushed out of there. And so I think that's what makes it so magical, different than most other museums.
Have you ever let anybody come in to actually use a board to do a session there at all?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. There's a board I leave out. I usually take it away in October because it gets too crazy and too many people and people sitting on the couch for too long and, you know, people want photo ops and stuff. But the rest of the year it's out there, and usually it's either positive or nothing. Nothing happens. But I've had everything from families, a mother and three kids, oldest kid about 10 years old, laying on the floor that used the Ouija board for 20 minutes or so, talking to one of their grandparents. They packed it up. They walked to the door without saying a word. They all turned around, ran back over, pulled the Ouija board out, talked for another 20 minutes or so. Two things that just happened recently were pretty funny. There was really no one else in the museum. These two girls came in and they were giggling and laughing and being kind of loud. And they saw the Ouija board. And so they pulled it out to start asking questions. And first question, was there a spirit here? The board just spelled back quiet. I'm like, okay, quiet. So they got a little freaked out. They stopped using it. About 2 days later, two more girls had come in, almost the same situation. And I said, these girls the other day had told them to be quiet. So they pulled it out. They asked the first question, was a spirit there? And it replied, yes. And then I didn't catch the second question. Third question, it spelled back stop. And they're like, oh, okay. So, you know, those, I wouldn't call those bad. I just, they didn't want to talk, you know, just like a cell phone. You dial numbers at 3 a.m. Not everyone wants to talk to you, you know, but those are some of the more recent experiences. But yeah, people come in quite a bit to use, just to use the board.
Now, do you have any boards for sale there at all? Because I would think after you take them on the tour, they're good to go to purchase these things.
Yeah, I actually have quite a, I'm probably the only place in the world that has, you know, 40 to 50 vintage antique boards for sale, and then dozens of new boards. So I try to keep every price point there, because some people, you know, they're coming to Salem to use the board. So they, maybe they haven't have a lot of experience with it, so they don't want to spend a lot of money for it. So I have new boards that start around $25. And then I get antique boards that go for literally, you know, thousands of dollars. But at any given time, I probably have, like right now on display, probably about two dozen, and I got about two dozen or so in the back. And then when you get to the new stuff, like the new Salem board, the new Exorcist board, those I stock quite a bit, because I know people are going to want to grab that as a souvenir for Salem.
Well, I would say, I would think it'd be cool to come home, you know, with a board and say, hey, I bought this in Salem.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. The new Salem board that came out, they did a really great job. Winning Moves was the company that made it. They licensed it from Hasbro and they used a lot of the city landmarks. So the Witch House, House of Seven Gables, some more, you know, popular tourist attractions like that are actually on the board itself. And I helped consult with it with merch, and they thank us. They put our names in there. So it's a really special piece of something never thought I'd be fortunate enough to not only consult with a company, but to actually be rewarded by my name being credited on there. So I think, people now are coming to the Ouija Museum to buy a Ouija board that has the Salem stuff that was helped in some way by myself in there. So that's been selling very well.
What impresses you the most about these boards that you keep finding?
I think that there's still so much mystery behind them. And, you know, as long as we've collected, it's funny how we still see stuff we have not seen, you know, and there are boards that pop up that maybe we only knew existed from being a patent, but not actually produced. So I think there's that part of it. And, you know, we have, with the Historical Society, we have a lot of theories still, you know, and we have a lot of hunches. And so we're still kind of actively trying to find out as much information about stuff. And so I like that the history, it still gets unveiled, you know, we still gets uncovered. And, you know, hopefully we always, it'll reveal itself when it's ready, but we try a lot of different things to find out that. And so to me, I think the history of it is really what's most fascinating, and that, you know, what else are we going to learn?
If you're standing on this strip in Vegas and you have a Ouija board history store and a Ouija board's in there, and there's other people as well that have these, people you don't know, these aren't your buddies, these are just, you know, just regular people selling these things. How do you get people into your store?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I'd probably ask people if they ever used the Ouija board and if they had that experience, or if they're afraid of them, or I'd probably just ask them what they might know of a Ouija board. And then I might just tell them something the opposite of what they think they know.
Okay.
You know, if they come back and say, you know, I used it and, you know, we used it one time and it told me that my friend was going to die and he died. I'd be like, oh, well, did you know that, you know, I just tell them some random opposite of that, sort of, to maybe get them interested to want to come inside and want to learn more. I think, you know, looking at the alphabet on a board is not the most interesting thing, in the sense that you can't imagine there's much history behind it. Mm-hmm. But I think if you can somehow give it a chance, you will be surprised. The Ouija board can connect to almost anything. I mean, I can connect it from, you know, politics to religion to, you know, movies and plays to literature, you name it. I mean, I really can connect it to a lot of things. And I think that's what I like about the museum now, is once, if you ask people, if they have questions, I'm not asking them because I expect them to think of a question, but more of like, I want to know what they're most interested in. Because some people might want to learn about litigation and lawsuits. Some people might want to just learn about spiritualism or capitalism with the Ouija board. And so I like to lead it to that. So I think if I was standing in Vegas talking to people, I would just try to get an idea of what they're into, and then try to tell them a Ouija fact close to home that they could relate to.
Now, you mentioned eBay earlier as far as collecting these things. How inundated is eBay with this? Because I know, you know, when you get on eBay and you type in haunted painting or haunted doll, I mean, the pages after pages after pages come up. Is that how it's like with the Ouija board?
You do get some people that will put the word haunted in on it. Those tend to be boards that by themselves wouldn't be super valuable. But that word haunted certainly makes things go for a lot more money, you know? But it's usually not with like the rarer boards. It's usually, you know, the Parker Brothers, the William Fold boards that are more plentiful. But I mean, searching for them, I mean, there are boards that, you know, have never been on. We own them. We're in our collections, but they've never sold on eBay before. We monitor this stuff and we've never seen it. So those would be the most fascinating, because it's only a guess as to how much something would like that would sell. You know, how do you price something that's never sold on eBay? You know,
with the advent of the internet, I mean, to find these things, I mean, obviously Craigslist wouldn't be a place either to find these things, or Nextdoor. So are there special forums that you go to find these items, or how does that work?
Well, for me, I mean, like I said, if you've met me more than one time, you probably remember I'm the Ouija guy. So okay. At the flea markets, I knock, you know, I get there before the vendors are there. I knock on windows as they're driving in, asking if they have Ouija boards in their car. I ask every single person who's, you know, I see, do they have Ouija boards? Mm-hmm. And then the funny thing is it works. I've been at the gym on a treadmill and a guy pull on my sleeve and be like, hey, you want to buy a Ouija board? I had bought one from him 6 years ago and he remembered that was the thing I was into. And he knew I was at the gym, and he waited to run into me there. So doing it in eBay, you're only going to get so much. Really, to me, I have to talk to people. Now, I'm lucky. The museum, people come there, and they hear the stories. And then I think they're like, wow, here's this guy that's really obsessed by this one thing enough to talk about it all day, 7 days. I don't take a day off, 7 days a week, you know, two museums. And so I get a lot of help from people who now have found something. They'll text me and say, hey, do you have this? Hey, I'm at a flea market right now and I see this some random part of the country, you know? And I think that's one of the best ways I've get things is from people helping me out.
Fantastic. So how can people find you, sir?
Well, they can go to SalemWitchboardMuseum.com. If they want to go on Instagram, I'm on Salem Witchboard Museum there or Witchboard Museum Baltimore. Those are probably Instagram is the best place to reach me. I am on Facebook as well, Salem Witchboard Museum. And then, you know, the old-fashioned way, you can come to my store downtown Salem at 127 Essex Street, right on the main strip there in Salem. And if you're in Baltimore, the Hamden neighborhood, I'm above an oddity store called Bazaar.
Okay. And what's next for you?
Well, I'm hoping to do some more lectures next year. I've done a few in the past. I've traveled to the UK and to Upper Peninsula there. But I'm really hoping to do some lectures. Definitely some exhibits coming up. Two pretty big announcements. I'm waiting till a couple more things become more final before I announce it. But more locations. That's all I can say right now.
All right, fair enough. Thank you so much for coming on. I learned so much.
My pleasure. So great talking with you. Thank you for having me.
We'll have to get you back on sometime. Jerry says we're going to have to drive out to Salem or take a trip out to Salem.
And
see it.
Please do.
Definitely. All right, sir. Well, you have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you as well. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. All right. I love having people on like him. Love to learn stuff. Learned so much about the Ouija board. And I hope you guys learn too. Tomorrow, my guest is going to be Michael Breen, and he's going to be talking about spooky stories of traveling on the road. So we're going to get so grab your popcorn and snacks for that one, because that's going to turn down those lights. It's going to be spooky. Thursday, I want to let you guys know ahead of time. Thursday, I have a doctor's appointment out of town in the afternoon, so the show will not be at 6:30 p.m. It'll be at 7:30 p.m. with Simeon Hine. So I just want to give you guys a heads up about Thursday. But tomorrow will be the usual time, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. I want to thank you all for joining me. I really appreciate it. If you haven't done so already, please be sure to check out our Patreon page. Got really some really neat stuff about there. Yep, about there. Over on that page that we're doing for our Patreon members. Again, like I announced yesterday, we are going to be scheduling some public ghost hunts here with the team. As soon as I get my team trained and ready to go on our new equipment. And so we'll be taking you, the public, with us on these ghost hunts. Also, we'll be going live via cell phone on some regular ghost hunts as well as we start getting things powered up. And I'm looking to do some stuff with the media as well. So you guys will see us on TV, hopefully, or hear us on the radio somewhere. But anyway, thank you guys so much for coming tonight. If you like the show, share it with five people. If you hated the show, share it with five of your enemies. We're equal opportunity here at California Haunt Radio. Be sure to show us some love up there. Give me a thumbs up. Give me a happy heart, happy face, and all that good stuff. All right, I will see you tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, right here. Unpleasant dreams, guys. Bye.